We're in a series called Yes, He Can. We're looking at miracles. And last week, we saw the moment where Jesus... I'm going to move this because if I don't, I'm going to kick it into the front row. We saw Jesus take 5 loaves and 2 fish, and he fed thousands and thousands of people. And the miracle that we zoomed in on last week, at least I hope we did, is the miracle that Jesus is more than enough. He's more than enough. Whatever it is that we're walking through. You see, the problem for many of us is we don't struggle with Jesus having the power. We don't struggle with Jesus having the ability to do something. We've come to understand that he's amazing and he's powerful and there's nothing that limits him. For many of us, the struggle is not can he, but will he? Or why won't he? If he is who he claims to be, and I've seen so much evidence that gives me confidence that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God, that he's more than enough, and yet here I am in the midst of a set of circumstances that is causing me, or at least contributing to this struggle that I have, is I know he can, but will he? Will he? Or sometimes we say, why won't he? Why won't he? Here I am. I'm standing with my arms outstretched, and I'm ready to be picked up. I'm ready to be lifted out of this mess, and yet I feel like I'm just standing here all alone. I know you can, Jesus. Why won't you? Do you not care? Are you not aware? In Matthew 14, if you'll join me there, we're going to pick it up in verse 23. It's where we left off, or verse 22. It's where we left off last week. We came to verse 21, and so we're just going to pick it up. This happens right after what we looked at last week. In fact, your Bible will say something like this. Immediately, on the tail of what just happened, right next, immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side of the sea, while he, this large body of water, this lake, often called a sea, to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds, that 15,000 plus people that they had just fed, he's going to go back and deal with the saying goodnight, goodbye, dismiss them and send them home. And after dismissing the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. Now, if you weren't here last week, go back and listen, go on the website and listen to it, but you'll hear, and you can just read the previous verses even, and you'll see that that is referencing back to Jesus hearing about his friend John the Baptist being executed and Jesus wanting to be alone. Remember? He went to a place to be alone. They get in a boat and they go across, but a large crowd had followed, and the events of last week unfold. Now he gets them in, his disciples, he puts them in a boat. And he says, now I want you to get in the boat and I want you to go to the other side. Okay? Just go to the other side. We don't know how much instructions he gives them or what details. He just puts them in the boat and he says, now go. Where are you going to go? I'm going to go back and I'm going to take care of the crowds. I'm going to send them home. Tell them that the service is over. Okay? Music will start playing and someone will say, you're dismissed. That was a joke and nobody laughed. So pay attention because that's going to happen in about 3.5 hours. We're going to be dismissed. Okay, about an hour. And music will play, and you'll know it's your cue to be dismissed. I'm going to go back. I'm going to dismiss the crowd. I'll take care of that. You guys go. And then Matthew records that Jesus finally, after an extremely long day of serving and ministering and teaching, he finally goes up to a place by himself to be alone, to be with the Father. And so he sends them away. He dismisses the crowd. He goes up to the mountain by himself. This is all intentional. You see it? This is Jesus doing this, right? Jesus putting him in the boat. Jesus dismissing the crowd. Jesus going up to the mountain to be by himself to pray. And then it says, when evening came, he was alone. Finally. You ever been there? Kids are in bed. TV's off. If you're married and you're a husband, you look at your wife and you go, hey, we're finally alone, you know? Did I hear it? Ooh, that was my own wife. Ooh, she said. You know, the chores are done, the pets are fed, the animals are fed, and then you finally get to sit down, maybe a cup of coffee or whatever, and you sit down on the couch, and you think, yes, and then what happens? You know, because you're so, it's too late. You know, the evening has come, the day is done, it's dark, it's quiet, and Jesus is alone. Tells us that he's praying. He's talking to the Father. I think he's grieving his friend. I think he is reflecting on John the Baptist. He's reflecting on the events of the day. And he's alone with his Father. However, but, in contrast, meanwhile, the boat was already over a mile from land. It's way out into the water, this large body of water. Some of your translations will say in the middle of the sea. And in the middle of this large body of water, far from land, what is it like? What are they experiencing? It says the boat was already over a mile from land and it's being battered. It's being smacked around by the waves. What causes waves? Wind, right? Wind causes waves. So we know that it's very windy. In fact, our Bible, Matthew, tells us in this gospel, the wind was against them. The wind was pushing them in the wrong direction. The waves are going in the opposite direction of where they want to go. Now, what were the two primary, what was their horsepower? What were the two primary means of moving in the direction you wanted to go? One was the sail. That ain't going to work, right? Because the wind, now they could try to be tack, is that what you call it? Tack and whatever, you know, back and forth. You can try to do that. It's a little difficult in the dark. It's a little difficult when the waves are against you. The other primary way you have is what? Oars, right? Manpower, elbow grease, paddle. So they're in the middle of this water, and if you just would picture in your mind, it's the middle of the night, it's dark, it's very windy, it's very rough seas, and there are 12 guys paddling to save their life, trying to make some kind of headway across this body of water. They're fishermen, right? So this is somewhat of a normal, you know, if you're not a fisherman like me, I would be curled up in a ball, you know, in the bottom of the boat, you know, just praying is what I'd be doing. But they're fishermen, okay, with the storm, and they're doing what they need to do. Likely, hopefully, they're working together. But they're in the middle of this dark body of water, and they're up against it. They're up against the waves. They're up against the wind. 3 a.m. comes. What time they get in the boat, I don't know. I'm just going to suggest that it was hours. Can we agree on that? It was hours. It was hours that they had been fighting against the wind, against the waves, trying to make headway, trying to get to their destination. At 3 a.m, Jesus came toward them. Now, I know not everybody marks their Bibles. If you look at my Bible, you'll see marks. You'll see highlighters and marks. If you mark your Bible, would you just mark that phrase, he came toward them? There's a lot of theology in that statement. They're in the middle of a storm. They're up against it. They're doing everything they can, humanly speaking. They're doing what they know to do in this kind of circumstances. And Jesus comes towards them. He comes towards them. What is he doing? He's got his own boat. He's got the sail up. He's tacking back and forth. He's what? Translation are you reading? He's walking on the water. Now, there's the miracle, right? There's the thing that what sticks in our mind. Stay with me this morning. He's walking on the water. He's walking on the sea. He's coming towards them. He's walking on the water. I'm going to say that a bunch of times tonight because some of us need to see and understand that phrase in a fresh way, because it's become too common to us. It's become too expected. Well, of course, Jesus walks on the water. I want you to look at it in a fresh way. I want you to hover there. I want you to think about what's really happening. He's walking on the water, on the sea, and when the disciples see him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And what they said was, it's a ghost, they whispered. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. Now, fear in a group, fear in a mob, if you will, or fear in a group of people is an interesting thing. It reveals personality. Fear, group fear, when you're with people, it reveals personality. And by that, what I mean by that is this, that your personality comes out. Everybody, it's just they cried out in fear. What it doesn't tell us is what they cried out. You know, one of the disciples, I'm sure, was like, mommy, mommy, mommy. He was crying out, mom, you know, for his mommy. Another one was probably crying out, who put us in the boat? Oh, how did we get here? Whose idea was it to come across in the middle of the night? Ah, and they're freaking out. You know, there's somebody in there looking at it theologically, you know. Well, it can't be a ghost because there's no such thing, so what? And they're trying to, you know, they're trying to teach. They're trying to analyze and resolve the situation. There's blame going on. There's yelling going on. One personality is doubling his effort on the oar, right? The whole fight or flight is kicking in. Come on, when you're afraid, this thing that God gave us, this fight or flight. Maybe somebody took an oar and smacked another one with the oar and said, it was your idea. But in this moment, it reveals personality. And so what's happening in this boat is pretty much chaos. It's chaos. Because they're freaked out. They're afraid. Now they have a new fear, a new challenge added to what they already had. Middle of the lake, middle of the night, it's dark, stormy, the wind's going in the wrong direction, we're tired. Oh, it was a long day for them too, wasn't it? They're tired physically, spiritually. I think that at this point, maybe they have forgotten about what just happened. Because that's us, right? Come on. They just witnessed an amazing moment where thousands of people were fed. They carried the food themselves. They looked at the baskets. Maybe for a couple hours, they looked at these baskets and they just kept coming and they kept feeding. Wow! You think they're thinking about that? I don't think so. I don't think so. It's just chaos. And now they've got this thing. They've got this person who's walking on water. It's got to be a demon, a ghost, a spirit. As if we didn't have enough to deal with, now we've got this coming at us. Jesus, where are you? Come on. We're people. They're people. How many of us in that boat are just saying, Jesus, where are you? You put me in this boat. You put me in this boat. You put me in the middle of the lake. You know what time it was that we left shore? I'm a fisherman. I know that you should never leave the shore at 11 p.m. at night. You put us in the boat. You put us in the situation. Where are you? Maybe they were crying out, please help. Save us. Jesus, where are you? Why aren't you with us? Where is Jesus? He's not here. He's up on a mountain somewhere and he's with God. He's with the Father and he's praying. Well, why isn't he here? Why isn't he here? What good is he going to do for us when he's over there? Why would you allow this? And what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, Jesus? I love Jesus' heart in this moment. I love his heart. It was 3 a.m. He comes towards them. He's walking on the sea. His disciples see him walking on the sea, and they're freaked out. They're terrified. It's a ghost. They said they're crying out in fear. There's pandemonium. There's chaos in the boat. And immediately, you see it there? Immediately. What does that tell me? That tells me about Jesus' heart. He ordered, before he got there, he knew what was happening. But he comes close to them. He approaches them, and now they're even freaking out more, and he sees us, and he immediately. He immediately responds in the moment. He immediately speaks to them. He immediately speaks to them. Now, this is not in your notes anywhere. I don't see a lot of people taking notes. If you're taking notes, Mr. Nate, if you're taking notes, I want you to just write a little note to yourself. What God does, and he's been doing it from the beginning of time, is he speaks to us. What he does. That's what this is. That's what God's intent is this morning. What's significant about this time right now that we're together is not my voice. You hear me? What's significant in this moment is not my voice. What's significant in this moment is the voice of God. Is God speaking through a person by the power of his Holy Spirit to your heart, to your mind, to speak to you, because that's what God does. He speaks to us. He speaks to us. Immediately, in the midst of this chaos, in the midst of this storm, what does Jesus do? He calms the storm. No, he doesn't. He flies into the boat and says, everybody sit down, I got it. Check this out. And a Nevin root or whatever, in the shore. No, that just popped into my head. That's not my notes. No, what does he do? Listen. Listen. Because what he does is he speaks. That's what he does. He speaks to you. Immediately, he speaks to them. Now, what does he say? What does he say? Immediately, he speaks to them and he says, have courage. You've seen this phrase in some be of good cheer. I'm on the scene. I'm here. I'm in control. I'm on it. It's gonna get good. It's gonna get good. Just hang on. Be of good courage. Then what does he say? It's me. It's me. Now, if you're a Greek scholar, ego, eimi. Ego, eimi. It's a phrase that appears multiple times in the New Testament. And here's how it's normally translated into English. I am. I am. Literally, it means this. It means, if you just take those two Greek words and you just look at them just as they appear, it literally means, I exist. Everything you've heard about me, everything that you've been taught, that you've witnessed, that you've seen, that I've shown you, and you just go, oh, it's too good to be true. It's too good to be true that there's somebody like that, that all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving, full of mercy, full of truth, eternal, unchanging, gracious. Nobody. I exist. That's me. All those things. All those things that are popping into your mind, to your heart. This one phrase, he says, I am. That was the name that he gave to Moses, wasn't it? Moses says, well, who do I tell your people that I speak for you and I'm here to lead you? They don't know your name. What's your name? What did he say? I am. You tell them that I am. You tell them I exist. You tell them I'm real. You tell them everything that I've shown you, everything that I've done to reveal myself to you. It's all true. I exist. I am. That's what Jesus says in that moment to those crazy, freaked out fishermen and disciples, tax collectors, all that they were in that boat. I am. Today we would say, it's me. Check it out, it's me. But I thought you were somewhere else. I'm here. I'm here. It's me. I am. Before Jesus calms the storm that we find ourselves in, just as these disciples did, before he calms the storm, I want to suggest to you that Jesus will show up in the storm as Lord of the storm. Now, some of you are walking through storms right now. Some of you are in little gales, you know, just a little kind of windy. The thing that's going to hit the East Coast, you're in that kind of that preliminary. Some of you are in the middle of it. Some of you are in that stage that it seems like the wind has died down, but then when you look at your surroundings, you look at your yard, you look at your home, you look at your life, it's just been decimated. You've seen the pictures, right? Californians, we don't have to deal. We picture earthquake. You know, and it feels like I'm kind of come through the worst of it, but now it's the cleanup. Now it's the putting things back together. What? Oh, I'm so overwhelmed with. In the storm, before he calms the storm, he shows up as Lord of the storm. He does that consistently. That's who he is. You see, the storm was intentional. We don't like to hear that. I don't want to hear that. But it's the truth. Who put him in the boat? Jesus. Who sent him across the lake in the middle of the night? Jesus. Who controls the wind and the creation? Jesus. He's the creator. See, this was all intentional. Now, you and me, or I'll just say me, I see Jesus and he says, it's me. What's the next thing out of my mouth? Then take care of me. Calm the storm. Get rid of the wind. Help. Fix it. End it. And does he? No, he doesn't. He just stands there. He's standing there, but he's not just standing there. He's standing there in the middle of the night, in the dark, on the top of the water, in the waves, and he says, it's me. It's me. I am. I'm here. I came towards you. I knew where you were. I knew what was going on in your life. I came to you, and now here I am. Take a look. But you're standing on top of the water. That's right. Not a problem for me. But you're not freaked out like us. That's right. Not a problem for me. Well, we don't know what to do. We were trying to... It's me. I'm here. Before he calms the storm, he shows up in the storm as Lord of the storm. And that's the lesson he wants you and I, if we're his child, if we're a follower of Jesus, he wants you and I to live from that truth. We might be in a storm. Thank you, Matt. We might be in a storm. We might be in a hurricane. But Jesus wants, before he calms it, he's going, wait, hold on. There's something I need to bring back for you. I am Lord of the storm. The storm's out of control, right? It seems crazy. Your life's a mess. You don't know what to do. You got nothing. But here I am. I'm still Lord. None of it touches me. He'll show up before he calms the storm. He'll show up as Lord of the storm. I love his divinely, obviously inspired response. He just says, I am. Grab onto that. Hold on to that. The same one that spoke to Moses from that bush is here now standing on the sea. Do you believe that? That's what the Bible tells us. That's what the Bible claims. That same one that said, Moses, I want you to serve me. I want you to lead the people out of Israel because I am. He's now standing on the water apart just nearby this boat, and he's saying the same thing. That's his response to them. I am. It's me. I exist. So what happens next? Who do you, just if you haven't read, well, maybe you read ahead, but who do you think talks? Don't you love Peter? Come on, give him some love. We're just like him. Some of us more than others, but we're just like him. Peter says, if it's you, because you claim that it's you, the great I am, if it's really the great I am, then tell me to get out of the boat. Dare me. For some of us older, Jefferson, I know, double dog dare you. Double dog dare me. If it's you, Peter answered him, command me to come to you on the water. Enable me to get out of this boat and do the impossible and come to you. And Jesus simply says what? Come. I love you, Peter. I love you. Come on. Get out of the boat. Go for it. What does Peter do? And climbing out of the boat, did you catch that? Another phrase to not skip over too quickly. He climbs out of the boat in onto the water in the midst of the storm. Peter starts walking on the water, and he came toward Jesus. The phrase here is he's moving. He's making progress. He is doing the impossible. When someone says, well, there's only one person that ever walked on the water, and that's Jesus, that's not true, is it? Because there's a second. Peter walks on the water. He's moving. He's making progress. He's getting nearer to Jesus. Verse 30, but when he saw the strength of the wind. Oh, you know what's significant about this? Peter's a fisherman. He makes his living. He lives and dies by the wind. I just called y'all, you know, wrong. You know, yes, I get what you're saying, the fish and the sea. But he makes his living by the wind. That's how they get around. That affects the fishing. That affects when you do and when you don't, and the seasons, when the wind is stronger and weaker and the direction it's coming from. Peter lives by the wind. Peter knows the wind. Peter understands the power of wind. He knows what it can do. And as he's walking on the water at 3 a.m. in the dark, begins to just reflect on what's happening, and the thing that fills his mind, the thing that fills his heart, the thing that consumes him is what he perceives as his greatest obstacle, his biggest enemy, and that is the wind. It's the wind that's causing all this problem. It's the wind that's going to kill him, and he's afraid. He sees the strength of the wind. Maybe he's a fisherman, he even says, that's a northeasterner, or what do they call him, Andrew, in the... A nor'easter, sorry, I got to say. It's a nor'easter or whatever. You know, maybe he identifies what... It's the Santa Ana wind. There you go. It's the Delta breeze. No. he recognized this wind. I know, this wind, this is a strong wind, and he's afraid. And he begins to sink. He begins to sink, and he cries out, Lord, save me. Now, I think we're guilty sometimes of this. We think of this moment, and in our minds, we picture quicksand. We picture quicksand, you know? Lord, save me, help, you know, because that just makes more sense, right? Because there has to be time, you know, for him to go, Lord, save me, you are my only, I'm referencing a movie. You are my only hope, and we just picture it like in slow motion. It doesn't tell us that. What happens when you step off the side of the pool onto the surface of the water? It's pretty immediate, right? It's pretty, you're sink. The point is, you don't have a lot of time. And he knows it. Don't think he said, Lord, the great I am, the creator. If you have time, would you therefore reach out thy hand and take a hold? No, he's like, help, save me. And he's going down fast. We don't know how close he is to Jesus, but he's going down fast. Here's the second thought. Before he calms the storm, Jesus will ask you to trust him in the storm. The storm is still raging as this is all happening. That's significant. Not only will he show up as Lord of the storm, he will ask you to trust him in the chaos and in the fear and in the doubt, in the pain of the storm. Get out of the boat, Peter. Trust me. And now Peter's out in the middle. Why is he out there? Some of it, depending on personality, half of you will go, well, Peter was foolish enough to ask and get out of the boat. Okay, that's one side. I'll make that you guys, okay? Well, Peter was fool enough to get out of the boat. It's his fault. This side over here is, it's Jesus' fault. Jesus should have said, it's unsafe, Peter. Stay in the boat. What are you thinking? I'm Jesus. You're not. Stay in the boat. And this side blames Jesus. Judge this side. Okay, let's look over here. No. It's Jesus' fault. Jesus said, get out of the boat. Jesus did say, yes, I'm here. Trust me. And he got out of the boat. Now who is Peter depending on as he's sinking? He's got one option. Do you see it? He's got one option. And he cries out and he says, Jesus, help me. Jesus, save me. Lord, save me. See, what Jesus wants to do in the storm, Nate, you talked about joy in the children, and then you talked about faith. You talked about faith. I've talked before about my grandkids, my one particular granddaughter, and yes, her mother is there. Make sure you always have medical insurance for your daughter. Because this particular one, Marley, who's 4, has this amazing display of childlike faith. We moved into a house recently, and we have these stairs. We have these 10-foot stairs. I don't know, it looks like, high school prom stairs, that you would come down for your date. We've been there a month or so, and I think she's about step 4. Papa! And she's launched. She's midair. Catches me. I'm really worried, because I'm getting older, I'm really worried as she works her way up that she's going to be on, like, step 15, and she's going to go, Papa! And she's going to jump, and she's not going to go far enough, and then I'm going to have to get up the stairs and... Now you say, well, that she's really foolish in her faith. I won't disagree with you, knowing who I am. But it's not foolish to have that kind of faith that just leaps and says, Jesus, catch me. Jesus, help me. I don't know what, there you are, I'm here, I'm in the storm. Lord, save me. See, that's what Jesus wants our response to be in the middle of the storm. You can say, well, Peter, he messed up. He took his eyes off Jesus. You're right. And he's sinking, so it's his own fault. But what he did in that moment was what we should all do. He said, Lord, save me. I know I got myself into this mess. I know it's my fault. I was the one that wanted to get out of the boat. I'm the one that did this, but Lord, save me. Peter's right where he should be. He's right where he should be. He's crying out to God in the middle of a storm, saying, help me, save me. Because see, Jesus comes, and before he calms the storm, he will ask you to trust him in the storm. Not trust him when the storm is done. Not go thank you when the storm is all done and everything's cleaned up. Oh, thank you. You got us through that. That's so good. He wants us to trust him when? In the storm. As we're sinking. He wants the cry of our heart to be, Lord, save me. Now, what does Jesus do when Peter cries out, Lord, save me? What does he do? Look at your Bible. Look at the text on the screen behind me. What does Jesus do? Here's this word again, verse 31. What's the first word? Immediately. Aren't you glad we're not Jesus? Aren't you glad I'm not Jesus? Well, come on, you know what I would do, right? My friend Don's like, I know exactly what, if Don says, Kurt, help me. Well, you got yourself in this mess. Can I still reach him? Okay. You know. Hey, how's that? Yeah, you know, I saved you. Oh, come on. You know, immediately Jesus reaches out his hand. He immediately reaches out his hand and he catches a hold of him. This word caught means to take possession of. Don't make the mistake of thinking that Jesus went, you know, and he kind of has this, you know, no, this is a full-grown man that's sinking fast. Jesus grabs a hold of him. He wraps his arms around him. He captures him. He catches hold of him, and he says to him, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? You have little faith. Why did you doubt? Now listen, we'll come back to that phrase in a minute, but listen to this. When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Don't miss that detail. When they got it, when they made it back to the boat, the wind ceased. And then those in the boat worshiped him and said, truly, you are the Son of, what does it say? God. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Truly, you are everything you claim to be. Here's the last thought. Before he calms the storm, Jesus will embrace you. Now catch this. He will embrace you in your struggle with the storm. Did you get that? He embraces Peter when he is sinking. He embraces Peter when Peter takes his eyes off of him and looks around at the circumstances. When Peter says, this storm is too much for me, and he begins to sink, that's when Jesus embraces him, wraps him in his arms, and pulls him in close. In my mind, he's holding him these words, oh, Peter. I think Peter... Are there any kids in here? Anybody holding a child? Randy, you holding a child? You are a child. Anybody holding a child? No, okay. A little bit older? Beautiful. When a child gets to where they can kind of hold on to, and you pick up a child, and if it hasn't happened yet, it'll happen soon, and their arms just go right around your neck, and they just hold on, they hug with their whole body. Come on, right? I mean, you know, as adults, we, you know, Jefferson, come here. You know, come on, just a second. It's like, you know, hey, man, good to see you. Hey, all right, okay, yeah, okay. All right, good. You know, as we get older, that's how we hug, right? But a child just grabs on, and they're holding on. They like to be there. They feel safe there. Well, in my mind, that's what Peter's doing. This grown man has got his whole body wrapped around Jesus. Jesus has his arms wrapped about him. And in that moment, Jesus, in the midst of the chaos and the storm, the guys are still yelling and freaking out in the boat, and he just has him right here, and Jesus says, oh, your faith is so little. Why did you doubt me? Now, I propose to you that in all of Peter's experience with Jesus in his journey for those 3 years, I believe this to be the most intimate moment that Peter has with his Lord. And when does it take place? In the middle of a crazy storm, in the middle of him failing, in the middle of him losing sight of who Jesus is, and he's sinking to his death, and in that moment, all that's going on, that's where he's wrapped in the arms of Jesus. And all of his failure, and all of his lack of faith, do you see it? Jesus, I know who you are, and I love you. I rescued you. I know you're struggling with your faith. This is crazy out here, isn't it? Whoa, you know, this is tough. I get it. Oh, come here. I love you. And he's got him wrapped up. The very next phrase says that when they get to the boat. You ever ask yourself how they get to the boat? Well, there's two options, right? One is that Jesus carries him. And they get back to the boat, and Jesus steps over the side of the boat into the boat. That'd be pretty cool. Oh, come on. Can you live with that? Would you? I would. Oh, you know. Yo, ho, yo, you know. And he's holding on, and he's carrying him back to the boat. The other option is that Jesus says, okay, ready to try this again? Maybe, will you hold my hand? I'll hold your hand. We'll go together. And maybe they held hands, and they walked back to the boat. Either way, I'm good. I would love to experience either one of those types of encounters with Jesus. They walk back, they carry back, they get back to the boat. When they're back in the boat, don't miss this, that's when Jesus calms the storm. See how excited everybody is? That's when Jesus calms the storm. Are you in a storm? Can I humbly give you some suggestions? No, I don't like the word suggestions. Can I humbly encourage you to take some steps? They're in your notes. If you haven't looked at your notes, I'd encourage you to take them out now. Just look at the bottom part of the notes that are in your bulletin this morning. If we're in a storm, if we're in the middle of the storm, what do we do? What do we do? Let me urge you to do this. The first one is this. Look for Jesus in the storm. I promise you, and I can say it confidently because God promises it, that he'll be moving where? Towards you. Somebody listened. Toward you. Somebody mark that. Somebody say amen. Amen. He moves towards you in the storm. Now, here's the danger. Jesus showed up, and did they recognize him? No, that's a problem for us too, isn't it? Make sure you recognize who he is. The first thing to do, if you're going to recognize him, here's the first thing you got to do. You got to be looking for him. You got to be looking for him. If you're not looking for him, you're not going to recognize him when he shows up. If you're in a storm, if we're in a storm, the first thing we need to do is this. We need to look for him. We need to look for Jesus, and we need to know that he's moving towards us. Number two, we need to move to him in the storm. When you see him, what's the number one priority? What do we do when we find him in the storm? We get to him. We move to him. What do we normally do? We move away from him, right? We try to run, we try to outrun the storm. We just try to get away. What's the first thing that we're prone to do when our life is in a storm? Number one, almost always, I know this from talking to hundreds of people over the years, this pattern is the same. The first thing we do is we stop reading our Bibles. Number two, almost every time, we stop going to church. Number three, we stop praying. We do everything wrong. We move in the opposite direction. Fear, anger, resentment, frustration is what we're feeling towards God, and we move away. If you're in a storm, move towards him. Get out of your boat. So I don't have a boat. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. We all do. Yeah. I got a little one. I want to see your boat. I want a big one, too. No. We all have a boat. It can be our own strength. It can be our pride. It can be self-preservation. It can be fear. You realize that fear can be your boat? Because at least I got something. I got my fear, and I'm going to hold on to it. Every one of us has a boat. I don't need to just look for Jesus in the storm. When I find him, I know he's there, even if I'm not totally sure. That's him. I'm pretty sure that's him. I'm going to move towards him. And you know how to move towards Jesus. You trust him. You trust him. Because what did he just say to you? He said, I exist. I am. I'm here. I'm everything that I've claimed to be. Get out of your boat. Really? Walk on. Yes. Do you see me? I'm standing on it. Come towards me. Move to Jesus in the storm. Get out of your boat. And here's the last thought. Hold on to Jesus in the storm. Because the truth is, he's already holding on to you. You ever had a child not want to be held? My least favorite thing the kids do, I think, is that back arching thing when they're little. Because it makes me look bad. It makes me look weak, right? It's like, whoa, hold on. You know, I'm a good dad. Yep. It's scary, too, isn't it? Yeah? Because you don't always catch them, do you? Nobody needs to admit that. All my children have bumps on the side of their heads. We'll just leave it at that. That child that just, nah. Or what about when you're just picking up a child to take him to bed and they're kicking and, you know, and, isn't that us sometimes? Isn't that me sometimes? The truth is, Jesus is there. He's moved towards me. He's saying, get out of your boat. I'll take care of you. We're in this together. It's going to be fine. Just move towards me. Do the things that I've already told you. that draws you to me. And then he reaches out and he scoops us up in his arms and he holds on to us. Regardless of where we're at in the struggle, regardless of what we're feeling or smell like or look like, the mess that we're in, he just holds on to us. And so here's what we need to do. We hold on to him. You just wrap your arms around his neck. I could never do that to God. Yes, you can. He's invited you to do that. That's what Peter, I'm convinced that Peter's got his arms hanging on for dear life to Jesus. Because Jesus doesn't do what we expect him to do and calm the storm first. He calms it at the right time when these other things have unfolded. Once he's made himself known, and there he is, and he invites us to trust him, and then he just picks us up and he holds on to us. And he says, you hold on to me. Can I urge you, for those of you that are in the eye of the storm, wherever you're at in the storm, just hold on to him. Hold on to him. I'll make you a promise. Here's my promise. Nothing, no one else, will ever come close to who Jesus is and what he'll do for you in the storm. He's all you need. He is all you need in the middle of your storm. Look for him, move towards him, and then hold on to him. Hold on to him. And you'll experience the miracle of his embrace. Just do this with me. Just wrap your arms around yourself for a second. Just embrace yourself. Just hold that posture. Father, we know that you're holding on to us. Give us the faith to hold on to you. In Jesus' great and precious name.